to this week's Know Them From Adam podcast. Happy New Year to everybody, and we are pleased to present to you today in the first podcast of the new year, former Patriots linebacker and current ESPN analyst Teddy Bruschi, as he looks back on the 10-year anniversary of the near-perfect season for the New England Patriots, what stands out to him, what he regrets, and also discusses, at length, the stroke he suffered during his playing career with the Patriots. Without further ado, Teddy Bruschi.
So, Teddy, 10 years.
Yes.
Since the unbeaten regular season and the, sorry to bring it up, Super Bowl loss to the New York Giants. Right. Does it feel like 10 years?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like 10 years, although the pain of the loss still hangs pretty close to my heart, but it's surprising to me when you say it's been 10 years from now and it's from here. And, but I think about it still. Yeah, I still think about it. You know, multiple championships I've won, but we are trying to win the championship, you know, the undefeated championship. Funny story. Mike Ditka, yeah. We were doing our champions show for ESPN. Yeah. I would say, I don't know when it was. We did
Which
that
is a
show.
Super Bowl show where they got together men who have won Super Bowl rings to talk about their experiences.
Yes.
Right?
And I was sitting next to Coach Ditka and I saw his ring and I had my ring. And I said, hey, Coach, can I see your ring? And he said, yeah. So I took a look at his ring, and on the ring, you know, usually is the record. And I look at his record and it said 18-1. And I said, you and I have an entirely different perspective on 18-1. You know, and I gave him back his ring because, of course, they lost on Monday Night Football, I think it was, to the Miami Dolphins. And then, of course, but ours, we saved for the last game. So we don't get to say we're a champion. So it was just a different perspective that I saw on that ring. Because 18-1 to me is dirty. I still feel like that's a failure.
You said it's still close to your heart.
Yeah.
How does it come up in your mind on a regular basis?
Whenever I hear the word perfect and someone talks about any type of word, something being perfect, or, oh man, that table setting looks perfect. And it goes through my mind.
Really?
Yes. That perfect to me is 19-0. That's perfect. That's just during that entire season, especially towards the end, you get 15, 16, 17. It starts to creep in the back of your mind. Like, what can you achieve? And so, of course, the 19-0 mark is probably what, I don't know, but if teams start the season wanting that, but as that season went, that's what we wanted. And that's what we were trying to achieve, especially through the playoffs. And so I will compliment people sometimes and say, man, that was some 19-0 stuff right there. Meaning, man, that was perfect, the job you did, or something like that. So every time someone uses the word perfect to me, I think of failure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if this is the perfect podcast, we failed.
No, I think I know what you're saying there. It does. I get, man, yeah.
How much did that weigh on the team as the season went on? Because that team started so strong and still was strong later on, but not quite as strong as the season went on.
I have to say week 14-ish for me. That's when it was like,
whew. Became a burden.
Not a burden, but almost you start thinking about what can you achieve, and then you wanting it. You start wanting it. So, and then wanting something, as you know, is then you start thinking about it, and then the pressure builds, and yes, it ends up becoming something that you have to have.
And what do you remember about the actual game itself, the day itself? Because the day of the game, you were out on the field with your sons warming up before. You remember that?
Right, because the previous Super Bowl was the one in Jacksonville when I had my two sons on the field, and everybody always talks to me about the moment that they captured sort of organically on the field before that Super Bowl. And so, but my third son was not on the field. He was only months old, and he was in the hotel room with my mother-in-law, so I wanted to make sure I got him out on the field before the Super Bowl. So I had all three of them with me. We had a good little time. I remember seeing Antonio Pierce, former Wildcats, both of us, you know, sort of wishing each other luck, you know, I mean, just, hey man, yeah, we'll see you out there, you know, all that. I always try to refrain from wishing people luck, more like stay healthy. I don't like to say good luck.
Because you don't want them to
have good
luck.
I don't want them to have good luck, right. So, saw him, just the feeling of, I mean, me and Brady going out to start, introductions, things like that. Everything's still vivid in my mind, yeah.
How vivid is the game in your mind?
Everyone has their play, I think. If Asante Samuel's play is the interception he dropped, if Rodney Harrison, of course, is the play that he didn't get the lot dislodged Tyree from the ball.
And he takes the snap under pressure, avoids the rush, and he's going to fight out of it. Still fights out of it. Now throws it deep downfield, wide open Tyree, who makes the catch.
My play was had to be fourth and one on the last drive. Because we have different packages. It was me and Junior Seau. It was like dime, Junior's in, regular Junior and I are in, nickel, I'm in, Junior's out, things like that. And it was a short yardage personnel grouping. Dive right at me, fullback, Madison Hedgecock, Brandon Jacobs right behind him. Took on Hedgecock the best I could, try to get a piece of Jacobs, and then I'm in on there. Jacobs falls forward just past the first down marker. So I always think to myself, man, should I have slanted the line? Should I have given him a Louis call? Should I have taken on that block differently? Should I have went over the top like I had done before, just jumping over the fullback and trying to get the ball carrier? So a lot of plays I see in my head still clear as day. Yes.
Would you trade one of your other Super Bowl rings to have that one back?
Oh, man. Well, I think the better question is, would I trade all three of them in? Because the one question is, if I could trade one of my Super Bowls to tell me it's an undefeated season, that's an easy answer. You know, it's like, you know, I'll take the undefeated season.
Yeah.
You want it, especially if it's a multiple championship. But I would not trade all three of mine for just that championship, even though it was the championship, because the experience of winning and losing and coming back and winning and going back to back and winning 3 out of 4, those are all different experiences in themselves. And to attempt to go undefeated is an entirely different perspective on itself. And I think this, that we might have handled it differently if we didn't have championships already in our back pocket.
Hmm.
Because the debate was all throughout the year. Do you need to rest? Should you take week 17 off some of your starters and rest? Because just to give yourself a better chance of winning the championship. No. No. And the easy answer from us on that question was always quickly, no. We've already won one, or we've already won two. Some guys, I've already won three. I want the one. That's the one I want. So why should I just try to get some old champ? It's another championship with a blemish on it. I want the perfect one. So no, don't rest us, coach. I remember captain's meetings when we go into Coach Belichick on Friday afternoon, telling him, don't take us out. I don't know how you feel. I don't know how the coaches feel, but we feel as a team, we want to win every game. So we were like making sure that we got every opportunity to do that.
What would you say to another team that finds itself in a similar predicament in the years to come about going for 19-0? What advice would you give those players and coaches?
Like the Indianapolis Colts that one year when they played, I think they lost to the Saints in the Super Bowl I can't think of the year, but then they had the same debate.
They were 13-0, I believe, at one point.
They were 13-0, and then
2009 in 2009,
and it was the game versus the Jets, I think, where they started pulling people out, and then the Jets came back and beat them. I think it was the Jets, and I was livid. I was just livid watching the game. I don't understand, and now I work with Bill Polian, and of course we talk about it once in a while. We've had conversations over the last couple of years about it, but I personally don't understand how you wouldn't go for it, and you wouldn't want to have the perfect mark, and especially since I thought the Colts had the same frame of mind that I had, which was they had already won one previously. Peyton already had his championship against the Bears, so man, you already got one. Why won't you just go play? But talking to Jeff Saturday here, and him working here, he's like, they were pounding the table. They really wanted to do it. So, I guess it's the players' feeling. I think most players would want to go for it. Some upper management people maybe have different theories. That's the way it went in that organization. You'd have to talk to them to get the details. But I would tell, an organization, you got to lay it all on the line. You won't regret it, because 5 years, 10 years down the road, you'll regret it.
Hmm. You bring up Bill Polian, working with Bill Polian.
Yeah.
That's strange, because there was such a heated rivalry and still is a heated rivalry between the Patriots and Colts. What's that like working with the enemy?
It's different, especially at first.
Look at each other's side eyes?
Yeah. There's always the little bit of the divide, Colt Patriot, because I really think that was our rival. That was the biggest rival.
Yeah.
It was
Oh, yeah.
The Colts. I think maybe the Steelers were in there early on, but towards the end, Peyton Manning, the Colts definitely. And, you know, Bill Polian, hearing him, it's interesting getting the perspective of him and what he thinks and all of that stuff. Cause then the more I work with him, the more it's like, yeah, man, you know what you're talking about. I do agree with a lot that you say. And I had history with Bill Polian before, coming out of college. I was a defensive lineman who had never played linebacker before. And when Polian was with the Panthers, he was the only GM, head coach, position coach that came out and worked me individually. And when they were with the Carolina Panthers. So I thought I was going to be a Panther. And he tells me too that he thought I was going to be a Panther until New England traded in front of him and went up and got me at the 86 overall pick.
Imagine how different your life would have turned out if you had been a Panther.
Right. Right. Very different.
Just a simple thing. Teams make that little distinction in your life that determine where your life is going to go. When you think about that, it's really an incredible concept.
It is. It's geographical, where you're going to live, the people you're going to be around, the coaches you're going to be with. Will you be with multiple staffs? What kind of success will you have? Because so many little things have to come into play to have a championship run like we had and like they're still having. You really have to draft well, bring the right people together. You know, have a player like Tom Brady, of course, leading the helm. But a lot has to go on.
We'll be back with more on the Northern From Adam podcast with Teddy Bruschi after this.
Hey, listen up. You need someone to take you on a deep dive into all things NFL? It's Dominic Foxworth from The Nickel Package, a daily podcast about football where you can get different perspectives each day of the week from different hosts. Find The Nickel Package on the ESPN app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
You bring up Brady. What is it that people not know about Brady as a teammate?
It never stops. It never stops about just the quest to win. And I think the best story I can say to explain that is this. After we won our third championship against the Philadelphia Eagles, there were a handful of us that were selected to the Pro Bowl, and we went to the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. Back then, I don't know how it is now, but back then they'd introduce all the teams, and the Super Bowl winner was the last group to be introduced. Mm-hmm. So the locker room keeps getting more empty and more empty as players, as the teams go out. You know, then of course, and then the divisional round player teams, and then the championship round players teams, and then the Super Bowl loser, and then the Super Bowl. It's just us. I mean, me, Brady, I think it was Seymour, Vinatieri, Izzo made it on special teams. That was a handful of us there. And before we went out, Brady gathered all of us around. And he says to us, you know, no one's ever won three in a row. And this is a week. This is a week after we just won the Super Bowl. We haven't even played in the Pro Bowl yet. There's no parade. There's no ring on our fingers or anything. I mean, I'm still sore from the game. You know, it's a week later, the Super Bowl, and he's already talking about winning three in a row. And I look at him, and I say, hey, that'd be great. But, man, I'm trying to relax because there wasn't even an off season yet. And he's talking about winning the next one. It doesn't stop. It just never stops. And he's the same now as he was back then in terms of everybody knows about his preparation, but his intensity on the field, winning every single game.
Yeah.
It's just that way with him.
How about Bill Belichick? What comes to mind when I bring up Bill that people don't know about?
I think a majority of what you see with him in press conferences and the way he handles media is a high percentage of the time is how he deals with players. Because with players, he has to make sure you're prepared. There's no time for small talk. There's no time for me, you know, to ask you about your families. There's just time for me to make sure you know how to play. And that's all it is. And that's all I wanted him to be. I don't want to be your friend. I'll be my friends with my guys on the team. Show me what to do. Tell me what to do. Those type of players will go really well along really well with Bill because that's all he is. That's all it ever is. Does he joke around once in a while? It's rare. I'll tell you that it's rare. And you can joke with him after you get, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in, something like that. Sure, absolutely. But he is all business, and I've always looked at him as business. But I'll tell you this. Since I've been retired, I really consider him a friend now in terms of the interactions that I've had, the communication that I've had. I don't know what happened. It just seemed to change.
How?
After I retired.
What happened? How is that? How do you feel that? How do you sense that? How do you describe that?
All right. Talking to him, it's different. You know, getting texts from him. I remember the first text I got from him. I was like, what is this? I had never gotten a text from him before, you know? Those type of things. Christmas cards, things like that. He's very, he's a very considerate man.
Very
considerate man.
Very.
I wouldn't know this as a player. I wouldn't have known it as a player. And I think that he doesn't care what you think of him as a player when you're a player there, because he has a job to do. And I think he knows that one day he's going to have to make a tough decision on you. And maybe it keeps that distance for him. You know, at least that's the way our relationship was with him and I. I mean, we had an opportunity to get real close. I almost died. I had a stroke. I don't think it ever really happened. And I don't think it ever really happened until, you know, I retired. I'll be sitting in a restaurant once in a while. I don't want to tell a restaurant or anything like that, but I was sitting in a restaurant once and I was about to pay the bill. And someone came up to me and said, Coach Belichick handled it. I don't know how he knew I was there. I don't know, but the bill was paid for. And I had my family and another family, and it was a good restaurant. Okay. And so things like that. He's a very considerate man.
How close did you come to dying, Teddy?
Well, the doctor told me if that clot was 1 inch to the left or to the right, I could have died. That's how it was. I remember him telling me that. And
the clock was one
the clot. The clot.
The clot.
The blood clot from my stroke. It was an ischemic stroke. Wasn't hemorrhagic. Didn't have any rupture or burst or anything like that. A blood clot got through via a hole in my heart. And instead of going through the lungs, it went straight up to my brain. And where that oxygen is deprived in the brain is your deficits. And for me, if it was an inch here or the other way, it would have been over, he told me. So it was close. It was close. I was very fortunate.
Feel anything, any after effects of that today at all?
No, besides the knowing that I've got a device in my heart that closed a couple of holes that I had. I mean, they went in and told me I had a PFO, congenital heart defect. And then they during the surgery, they go out and tell my wife I've also got an ASD. We got to close both. I didn't know that. But no, besides the device in my heart, I made a full recovery. My right frontal lobe. I've got all these medical terms for you, Chef. The right frontal lobe of my brain. The damage isn't reversible. So there's some things that I know about myself that a lot of people don't know about themselves. I know about my blood. I know about a blood condition. I know about a hole in my heart. I know what I went through. So there's a lot of things that I am different. I am different in terms of what I went through. But in terms of everyday life, I'm doing pretty good now.
How much did that scare you at that point in time with the three boys who were young at that time?
Yeah, I retired. I mean, I went into Coach Belichick's office and told him I retired. And I remember leaving, thinking, just the bomb exploded of emotions of me and going down route one and seeing all the usual route one landmarks. The Lafayette House on the right. Luciano's, one of my favorite restaurants. Passing by that, 495 on my way home, you know, telling myself, that's the last time I'm going to take that route from the stadium to my house as a player. It was devastating for me. And I just didn't anticipate it was possible for me to get better because I couldn't see. My sight was the one that I couldn't rehab. I could control my left arm and my left leg and hip and all that stuff. I couldn't control my sight. I didn't know if it'd come back. I still had to have the surgery. So I was like, how am I supposed to ever play football? So I retired.
But yeah. You came back, didn't you?
I did. I did come back. It was after, you know, however long it took, weeks, months. I mean, when my sight came back, I thought to myself, man, there's a chance. There's a chance. You know, I can see because, I mean, you can't see out of the left field division of both your eyes. You're running down a football field. You're going to get cleaned out. I couldn't see to the left, you know. So once that cleared up, I started asking doctors again. And I started, it was like, is it possible? This and all that. So, you know, that there was a weird revelation for me when you ask your doctor about, let me get the phone number of the guy that's done this before so I can call him and ask him all the questions that I have in my mind. And there's silence on the other line, and he says, you'd be the first. I'm like, well, wow. All right, hold on a second. I'll call you back, doc. I don't know if I want to do it, you know? Yeah. Like, hey, man, if I hit somebody, is my brain going to explode because I've already had a stroke? If I hit somebody, is a device in my heart going to move because no one's ever played with this device in their heart before? Doc, can you answer these questions? But doctors, Shefty, they're always gray. Yeah. Chances are slim. It shouldn't.
But they don't know.
That's not good enough, man.
But
I need more.
They can't give you definition.
That's right. That's right.
Answers.
That's right. Dr. Day at Brigham and Women's Hospital told me this is something you have to go get. You have to go through. I'm telling you, you're as healthy as you're going to be. But can you take the emotional stress and the responsibility of, you know, giving it a try? But just like I said earlier, going for 19-0 and then also trying to make a comeback. Mm. I thought to myself, in 5 years, 10 years, if I don't try, it'd eat me up.
Did you have any limitations when you did come back? Did you notice anything different?
No physical limitations. Was I a year older? Yeah, I was a year older. I started, what was I, 34 then? 33? Was I 33 then? Stroke at 31, 32, 33. I think I was 33. Mm. I was already starting to slow down. You know, I don't know if it was stroke or not. You know, I'll tell you this, though. I didn't lead the team in tackles for the New England Patriots until after as a stroke survivor.
Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so proud of that, man. I wasn't good at stats, but I'll tell you how many tackles I had as a stroke survivor, 366 as a stroke survivor. And I always wanted to fill up the stat sheet. Okay, I got a tackle. I got an assisted tackle. I got a tackle for loss. Okay, I got a sack. I did that. I forced a fumble. I did that. I got to get that interception. I got to get the interception because my doctor was like, well, the interception may be the toughest thing. Because it takes a little eye-hand coordination and like maybe you'll be slower that way. And so we were playing the Jets and it was like one of the last plays of the half, I think. And I was following the ball in the air and then there was a receiver and a bunch of guys and boom, the ball bounced and then it bounced in the air and I had to redirect. Sorry about that. I had to redirect and I caught the ball and I got an interception. So that was the ball that I signed to my neurologist, Dr. Greer, and I said, come back complete. And I send it to him. And he said it in his office. Yeah. So, yeah, there it is.
Is that why Belichick called you the perfect player when you actually did retire? Because you embodied everything that a player should.
I think about that. I'm like, why would he use that? And this is my explanation. My explanation is because I think he turned me into the player that I was. Because I came into the New England Patriots in 96 with Bill Parcells and when Coach Belichick was the defensive backs coach. Al Groh was the linebacker coach and I was the only linebacker they had drafted, but only playing defensive end my entire career at the University of Arizona. They try to explain to me when it's cover two, you drop back to the hook. I had to raise my hand and say, where's that? I did not know anything. I was bare bones. Didn't know who I was. Didn't know what to do as a linebacker, but Parcells left. Pete Carroll came in for 3 years, got some great coaching with those two coaches. Then Coach Belichick came in, and that's when I started to figure things out. And from knowing special teams, from becoming an every down player to becoming a championship player, there's such a big progression you have to do to get to contributing in a big way to a championship team. And you think he saw probably every stage of my development. Mm. And so maybe that's why he said that.
How much did it mean to you when he did say it?
Yeah, I was, like I said, I had retired and there it comes. There comes the start of it. It's like, man, this guy's never complimented me rarely in my entire career. And now he breaks that out. And it started to help me understand who he tries to be as a head coach with his players. But that meant a lot to me. That meant a lot to me. And, no, it was surprising and, you know, much appreciated.
It meant more than picking up the dinner bill at Luciano's, right?
It wasn't at Luciano's.
Luciano's. Hey, you brought up a couple of names, and I just wanted to ask what comes to mind with these guys because we're talking about Hall of Fame football people.
Okay.
Junior Seau. You played with Junior Seau.
Yeah. Such an honor to play for him because, like I was telling my progression as a linebacker, when Bo Pelini was my head coach and I was playing for Pete Carroll, I'd watch Junior Seau.
Yeah.
Watch him play because I thought instinctively the way he'd, you know, he played linebacker like a pass rusher almost, the way that he'd just penetrate and just go for things and go after quarterbacks and tackles for losses. And that's all I was in college. I mean, so I admired him before I knew him, and then he came in and I had never seen championship, I mean, commitment like that. I had strength coaches coming up to me and saying, Brew, can you please talk to Junior? Please tell him, all right? I get in here at 6 a.m. every morning, all right? He gets in here at 5. If he's in here at 5 and I'm not in here till 6, that's on me. You see, I have to be here. Mm-hmm. Brew, I'd like to see my kids for a little bit before I leave, okay? You think you can do that? I'm like, he's been doing this for 20 years. You tell him. He's not going to change now. I mean, that's Junior. That's Junior. And, man, and seeing it in person, the practice, habits, the
intensity,
everything was right? Intense. Everything, the pregame speeches, him in the weight room, the energy, the endless energy of Junior Seau.
Let me say this. I covered the AFC West for 15 years while covering the Broncos. So I watched Junior Seau twice a year in person.
Yeah.
And he is one of the only players that I watched that when I watched the game, I watched him specifically.
I know exactly.
Because he was a whirling dervish.
Yes.
Running around, endless energy all over the place. Yeah. And there are only two players that captivated me like that. Junior Seau was one.
Yeah.
Ray Lewis was the other.
Yes. Just, it's unique. It's just unique to be able to have that type of energy and demand it of others the way they did it.
What about Bill Parcells? You played for him coming into the league. Man, what stands out about him and what made him the coach he was?
So fortunate to have him lay my foundation. And you know what? I tell him that. I try. You know what? Bill, for me, he had the other side. Like he had a very nurturing side for me as a rookie too. I mean, I think he noticed what I was trying. He had noticed where I was going, like the potential that I had. And I remember him. We had this old Foxborough Stadium and we're at down at the old bubble where we had to drive to. And I'm walking out of practice where I intercepted Drew Bledsoe right in front of David Meggett. And he says, "Hey, Brewski, get in the car." Cause he used to drive to practice in his Cadillac Eldorado all the time and everybody had to drive to their practice and sort of squish into their cars. And I was like, "Oh, hope I didn't do anything." So he gets me in his car and he drives me back to the stadium. And the whole time he talks to me about getting an accountant. Talk to me about, getting me an accountant. He says, "Teddy, listen, Brewski, I've seen more guys go down in this game through the IRS than anything else. Get yourself an accountant."
Wow.
I don't know. It was just talks like that. Did talk you? Like that. Yeah. And I went home and I called my agent and I said, "I need an accountant." He said, "Teddy, it's November." I said, "I don't know what that means." I mean, I had never filed a tax return in my life. You got time till April. Yeah. I was like, "I don't know. Get somebody." And when Bill talked to you like that, whether it was football or life, you listened. And that year, I think he might have known that was his last year in New England, a 96 year. You know, him and Mr. Kraft had some difficulties I had read and I had ended up finding out about in the past. But he took a lot of time with that team in team meetings before practice. I mean, it would be 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Mm. Him just talking to us about various things like, you know, don't be some ham and egg unit or driving the bus and then the potential of certain players in the room. And he took a lot of time with that, with all of us. And I soaked up every word. And, you know, Bill Belichick once taught me this too on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's about football and family and a lot of things. But mainly, you got to remember this piece about you being here, playing football and being in the National Football League, fellas. Take time today to contact one person that helped you get here. Bill told us that one year. And ever since then, on Thanksgiving, I mean, I'll shoot Bill. I mean, Parcells a text, both Bills. Belichick, thanking them for what they did for me along my football journey. My high school coaches I try to get in touch with. Dick Tomey I call. And that's because, you know, Parcells, Belichick, it's all about, you know, they teach you other things too when it's time.
Awesome. Teddy, the playoffs are about to begin this week. Give me a team that you think has got a real chance to win the Super Bowl. A favorite, an underdog, whoever. Who's the team we're watching this week when the playoffs begin?
Well, you gotta, I mean, of course I'm going to bring up New England to start. This team is just so game plan specific. Bill Belichick just always has them ready. Has them ready in terms of how to prepare and how to play, how to attack weaknesses and how to take away strengths. It's one of their strengths. So, of course, my old team, they're going to be one to look out for. I am very curious about the Minnesota Vikings, because can Case Keenum finish his story out? Because it's a beautiful story right now.
He can, I think.
It is. It is. And if he can finish that out and take them right to where they are, you know, Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. Of course, I'm talking about a couple of the top seeds, but it's been a pleasure to watch that team with Zimmer. I've listened to Zimmer a lot. And why I say I've listened to him.
A lot of Parcells in him.
As an analyst, because I'll go on that app, that Minnesota Vikings app, and I'll listen to press conferences. Off season, in season, whatever. And if I'm not mistaken, all you Minnesota Vikings fans out there, Zimmer said this once last year. I'd like to teach my team four things. Number one, I'd like to teach them to compete. He's done that. I'd like to teach them how to win. He's done that. I'd like to teach them how to handle winning. He's so close on all of them. And the last one, you got to teach them how to win championships. Those are four things that stuck in my mind from listening to him, that he's in the process of teaching that team. So I want to see if they can finish it out.
Teddy, on the 10-year anniversary of your failed attempt at 19-0, you have been a 19-0 guest.
Oh, I achieved it.
And I don't mean to insult you, but you have been.
Well, thanks, Shefty. Good talking to you, buddy.
Play-by-play of David Tyree's catch came courtesy to us from Bob Papa of WFAN.